And so as we begin this series, we're telling these stories that are really epic, that you could see going or being in a movie. And this week, we're going to talk about the story of Noah. Before I tell you that story and we get into it, really, I want to tell you a story of what happened to me several years ago. We were kind of in between transition from the previous church that I was at to this church. We took about a week off. My wife and I went to San Diego just to kind of unwind and relax. We just needed a break. And so we got to that point, we got there, and we were just kind of really went without a lot of plans. And so we got there and decided what we were going to do during our time there. And so as we're thinking about it and looking at stuff, I actually found something called a coffee cupping. And basically, it's kind of a weird name. Why would you call it that? I don't know. But basically, it's a process of tasting and testing coffee, trying to figure out if it's good or not, and what you should look for, and all this stuff. And it was at a pretty well-known and popular coffee shop, and it was free. And I was like, hey, we got nothing to lose here. There's an hour that we can do this. It's something we would probably never do again. And so let's just go for it. Let's do it. Well, it's pretty funny because we walk in, and as I said, it's a pretty well-known coffee shop, so it's just packed. And there's this little glass room in the back where there's kind of some tables set up, some other stuff, and that was where the cupping class was. And there were about 6 to 8 of us in this room with this owner who is very passionate about coffee. And some of you are too, and I'm not trying to offend you. I'm not making fun of you either. It's just different strokes for different folks, right? Like, I'm just not that passionate about it. But he is clearly very passionate about coffee. He's very passionate about this process. And so we get in there, and he just begins to tell us all this stuff, how they're harvested and what to look for. And I mean, it's literally the whole process they go through when they're testing out if they're going to buy coffee or not. And so we see the green beans, and he's telling us all about that. And then he shows us the roasted beans, and we're looking at those and kind of smelling them and whatever stuff. And then we get to the part where they grind it. And there's like multiple steps to this process. I don't remember all of them, but shows you how passionate I was about it. But we get to the part where they grind the coffee, and they've just ground it. And now they give you this little bowl and with coffee grounds in it. And they're like, okay, tell us what you smell. Well, there's probably a point in your life where you start realizing like one of these is not like the other, or maybe two of these, like me and my wife, it's like, who are these country folks? But they hand us these cups and they just tell us, hey, just start smelling what you're saying, what you're smelling. Well, almost immediately, like there's a couple beside us that is clearly pretty passionate about this. Again, I'm not making fun of them. It's just different things. And so they're starting to smell and they're like, it's a chocolate. And one says blueberries. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, how do you get this, and what is going on here, and like what have I kind of gotten myself into? And he's like agreeing, the owner is, and they're continuing to talk. Well, then like more people start answering, and it's stuff that just doesn't make sense, like cheese and other stuff. And clearly like he's starting to get a little bit like, okay, you know, maybe I'm gonna have to educate these people a little bit. And he was super nice guy, but it's just getting to this point. And so it's the point where like I'm sitting there, and like it's if you've been in school and the teacher is gonna call on you, and you're like, just please don't call on me, please don't call on me, please. I have no idea what I'm gonna say, because I'm really not smelling anything. And like disclaimer here, like I love all coffee. Cheap coffee's good coffee. Expensive coffee's good coffee. It tastes different, but it's not like I have one better than the other. Like I'll drink Folgers or any other brand. I'll drink it a day old. That's about my cutoff line. But if it's a day old, I'll just throw it back in the cup and put it in the microwave, and we're ready to roll. Like I'm happy and it's good, and I have no problem with that. I've even got some grounds in my camping box that I take. It's probably 3 or 4 years old, and I'll throw it in there, and it's good. Some of you are just like, this guy is crazy. Again, one of these is not like the other, but there's some of you who probably don't care that much either, and it's just not something that I'm passionate about. And so as we're smelling these, I'm just going, please don't call on me. Please don't call on me. Please don't call on me. So finally, it gets to the point, he calls on me. What do you smell? It's like, what answer do I give in this situation? And so I said, hey, is coffee a wrong answer? And it was kind of like the breaking point. He's like, okay, I've got to educate these people. And so he reaches under the desk and pulls out this deal and puts it on the table. And this is what he pulled out. Anybody ever seen these before? This is a coffee flavor wheel. And so it's basically like, hey, this is what you're supposed to be smelling. Here you go. Like, you're not doing this right. I'm going to show you, and I'm going to kind of put you on the same line. And he did it in a super nice way. Like, it wasn't looking down on me. It was nice, but he's like, yeah, you'll start in the middle, and you kind of figure out what you're smelling, which you may not be able to read that. Some of it is, like, fruity or floral or sweet or nutty or spices or other. I was just playing on some of the other categories because it's like, hey, I can't go wrong with other. Like, it's just whatever I define it as, right? But there's still definitions for other, so you can go wrong. And like green and sour. There's all these things. So you begin to smell this stuff and then you begin to work out. It's like, okay, I'm smelling something fruity. What is it? Well, maybe it's a berry. Maybe it's a blackberry, raspberry, blueberry, strawberry. Has anybody smelled this stuff in coffee? Like, I'm just looking at this going, okay, all right. And there's like sweet, there's brown sugar. Is your brown sugar honey, caramelized, maple syrup, or molasses? All of the above, you know, like, and really my favorite one, and I ask him about this, is you go to other, and then it's like papery, and there's literally cardboard. Like, okay, well, I guess we shouldn't say cheese, but cardboard's okay. Like, I don't know how I would have known that. The point is, like, we're going through this coffee tasting, and it's just like, what is going on? Like, how am I supposed to know all this stuff, and what is happening here? And there was a point where, like, everyone around the table started giving off, like, initially, like, blueberries and chocolate, and it's like, are we smelling the same thing here? Like, hey, let's trade. Let's see what we can do here, you know, because I'm going, I have no idea how you're getting all this. Are we smelling the same thing? But when he pulls this flavor wheel out and he puts it on the counter, then I had a little bit more guidance of where I should go. I had a little bit more basis on what was good and not good. Now I knew, like, cheese is not one you should say. So I'm only going to say something on the paper. Why? Because I know that that's the best thing. I know that that's the right thing. I know that that's the good thing. And I'm trying not to, like, just make myself seem like this country bumpkin. And so I'm just trying to, like, have this reformed taste. Like, oh, yeah, I smell this. And, you know, there were several that I'm like, I'm smelling this. He's like, oh, interesting. I've never heard that one before. It's like, yeah, I'm smelling it, man. Like, it's happening. But as we're going on this, like, there's this point where I went, man, are we smelling the same thing here? Because there's this point where it's like, clearly I am not on the same page as everybody else. I'm not on the same page as these people. I'm not on the same page as this owner. And so in that moment of going, man, are we smelling the same thing here? The flavor wheel kind of brought clarity. And when I aligned what I was trying to do with that, whether I actually smelled it or not, I began to work and operate in those boundaries. And I accepted it as true. Like, this guy knows a lot more than me. It's like, who am I to say, nah, bro, like, you can smell something else here. It's like, no, this is it. And so I accepted that as truth. I worked off of that, and it brought alignment. It brought harmony for me. And in our lives, this is interesting. This is kind of where Noah and this story comes in too. But in our lives, we can be here with God as well. Like, in that moment of going, man, are we smelling the same thing here? Maybe it's not smell, but it's looking at something. It's looking at a situation. It's seeing hurt and pain. It's seeing something that you feel like needs to be done. It's seeing something that you feel like should be right, and it's not. And you're going, God, are we seeing the same thing here? Are we looking at the same thing here? And I'm sure in Noah's story, when we see that, there were times where he probably had that thought, like, God, are we looking at the same thing? Are we seeing the same thing? Are we aligned here, there? Because there was kind of this disharmony, and Noah had a choice to accept that and accept what God said was true and right and good, or go with what everyone else was doing. And so in this moment, typically, like for me, it's in the waiting. And I think what we would see in Noah's life is probably in the waiting. But in the waiting, we have these moments where we make and look at God and go, man, are we seeing the same thing here? And when we get to those moments, what do we do and how do we approach that? Well, we can learn a lot from Noah's life. And one of the things as we talk about that, Noah, the story of Noah begins at the end of Genesis chapter 5. Genesis, the first book of your Bible. And really what we want to talk about before that is Genesis, or this story of Noah, is created or connected with really tightly with what happens before it. So like Genesis chapters 1 through 11 are all pretty tightly connected, and they're all meant to be read in understanding of another. And so I want to kind of give a little bit of a crash course on what was going on beforehand. So beforehand, we see the creation account, the creation story, where in the beginning, God created, and he's creating all of these things, and it took him 7 days. And as he's doing this, he finally creates humans, and this is his best creation. This is his prized creation, and they can do anything they want, but he gives them one rule: just don't eat of the tree of good and evil, or don't eat of the tree of knowledge, for it'll be good and evil, and if you eat of it, you will surely die. God told them this. They knew that it was not a deal that they had to just like figure out or kind of piece together. I think some of the times I feel like, man, some of the stuff God tells us is like, man, I've just got to figure this out or kind of piece this together. Like, this was very clear. It was very clear, and it was very intentional to be that way. Like, they knew from the beginning, if they ate of that tree, it would cause them death. What happens in the garden is the serpent, Satan, who comes and says, hey, did God really mean that? He begins to put doubt in their minds, and they begin to believe a lie as truth. they adopt their own truth and say, no, God just doesn't want us to be like him. And so they eat this fruit, and now from that moment, humanity is broken. There's brokenness there. There's a separation from God. Now these things that they had were good. Now there's going to be hurt and pain and hardship. You can read all about that in Genesis 3, and then we get to the story of Genesis 4 and 5, where we get the story of Cain and Abel, two brothers who end up killing, one ends up killing the other, and you just see this brokenness happen, and as we continue on, we're introduced to Noah, but what we know about what's happened between Cain and Abel and Noah is that evil has just run rampant. Brokenness is all around, and things kind of seem pretty bleak. So we're going to start in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. We read 5-7. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. It's powerful stuff. The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. So the Lord said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I've created, and with them the animals, the birds, and the creatures that move along the ground, for I regret that I have made them. And this is really tough language, especially, and one of the reasons why I want to talk about what happens before this is because when we read this, we can go, man, that seems so strange or kind of out of touch for the God that we know, because God's caring, God's loving. Well, God is also just, which means that he is going to do things fairly, and he represents truth. And so when he told Adam and Eve back in the garden, if you eat this, you will die, this is just a part of the truth that he told them, and it's a result of their decision. It seems really hard to comprehend, and this whole story can be really hard to comprehend. It challenges maybe some of the things that we've thought before, but what we know about this is that everyone in the world at this point had gone about their own way. They'd chosen their own path. They'd done their own thing. They had chosen their own flavor wheel of sorts, and they had operated on that because what they thought was good to them. Their truth was true, and your truth was true, and all of this was happening, and what we see is that all that happens and what happens quickly is there's this fall. There's sin that at the end of the world, where we get to the point at the end of verse 5 where it says, in that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. Man, that's crazy to think about. I think about our world, and I feel like I could say that sometimes, but then I read Noah's account, and I'm like, man, I think he may have had it worse. This is a crazy deal, and what happens is humans, what we realize is that humans were actually better off for trusting God for the knowledge of what was good and true than to having to make that choice on their own. And what they chose was to make the choice on their own. They defined it, and so what ends up happening is the world is wicked. But look down in verse 8, chapter 6, verse 8. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. And so in this moment of where all humanity is in a really bad place, now we see kind of some hope on the scene. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. The situation was really bad, but there's this guy named Noah. And this is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Think about what was just said of him. Blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. I don't really know exactly how to say that, but you can create your own version, I guess, if you want. But anyway, what we know about Noah and what's said at the beginning of Genesis chapter 1 is that Noah had these three sons at 500 years old. That's kind of crazy, right? Like, let's think about that. This is, and as I said, this is kind of movie stuff. Like, he's 500 years old and had three sons. Can you imagine that? Like, this is a kind of a crazy deal, and Noah was different in several ways, and different isn't always easy. It's not always easy now, but when you think about Noah and having kids at 500 years, like, I think about that and just go, man, I don't know how in the world he did that. Football was not kind on my body, and so there's mornings that I wake up and I hurt, and I'm going, man, I don't know what it's going to be like when I'm 75, you know, or whatever. But I'm just thinking about 500, how bad I would hurt, and then having kids on top of that, like, it just wears me out to think about it. And the age thing is something that's talked about in the Bible, and there's really a couple different variations of this, and it's not as important as to where you fall on this. Like, we don't have to all agree on this. Some people would say that the people lived older, all people lived older at this point until the flood happened, and then the flood happened and fungus and bacteria was brought in, and so lives were shortened. There's another view that says, based on what's said right before this, that people only lived 120 years, but there's 10 accounts of people that lived longer than that. And it's just a work of God. It's just something we don't understand, but God calls them to live longer. I would probably agree with that, but again, it doesn't matter where you fall on that. What we can understand is there was 500 years of Noah's life where he's experiencing all of this on earth. For 500 years. And I can't imagine him not having this question of like, God, are we looking at the same thing here? Like, what is going on in our world? What is happening right now? God, are you seeing this? Are you understanding this? And not having a lot of response in those questions, like as he's seeing all this evil happening and all these things happening, I can only imagine he would just be asking God, are we looking at the same thing here? And we don't know those conversations with God or his thoughts because we don't have a lot of that in the Bible. What we do know is what's said of him. And in the waiting of his life, in the first 500 years, but also we see this later on, in the waiting of his life, what happened is Noah was faithful. And so we know at some point Noah said, okay, I don't understand this. I'm not grasping this. I'm not understanding everything that's going on. I don't know why you're doing certain things, but I'm going to take what you say is true and I'm going to believe in that. I'm going to be obedient to that. I'm going to understand and put my faith, or try to understand and put my faith in you. Like Noah had a choice. He could have, like a lot of society around him at that time, gone about and picked his own flavor wheel, choose his own way to go about things. But instead he went, hey, I don't know about this and I'm not sure I completely understand this, but God, I'm going to adopt what you tell me is true and I'm gonna work off of that. And what happened was that brought harmony between him and God. He was obedient, he was faithful, he was blameless in the culture. And so we learn from this at this point, because we see what happens in Noah's life. And was that an easy thing? Absolutely not. It's not an easy thing now. Like, I still want to do my own thing, but the question I have to you this morning, I think the question we have to ask ourselves when we see Noah's life, especially these first 500 years, but all throughout his life, is how are you responding to God in the waiting? How are you responding to God in the waiting? Are you finding other things to kind of believe is true, or modifying it how you want? Things you don't understand, things you don't know what's going on? Or are you seeing what God says and trusting it is true and right and putting your faith in that? Today, again, we seem to live in this world that seems broken and hard, and I'll look at it and go, man, how could it get any worse? Or how could it be this? It just seems so bad. And I look at Noah's life and I go, man, I think we probably have it a little better than he did. But still, the question I want to ask, I think when we look at this, is what flavor wheel do you use in your life? Better yet, whose flavor wheel do you use in your life? What's guiding your thoughts and your faith and all these things? And like this coffee experience that I had, like I had no direction before that happened. I was just kind of trying to pull from thin air and it wasn't working that well. We can find direction from a lot of places, but what we need to realize and see from Noah's life is when we find direction from anything other than God, it's going to end up not in a good place. Because that's where the rest of humanity is that we see. So after 500 years, Noah has sons. And then God comes to Noah and he tells him at this point that I'm going to do all these things. And so Noah, God reveals to Noah his plan. He tells him what's going on and it's going to flood the earth and all this stuff is going to happen. And I can only imagine where Noah is going with this, because this was a concept that was brand new to him. This was a concept that was hard for him to deal with, just like it's hard for us to read this and kind of wrap our minds around all of these things. So Noah's at this place where he's probably struggling a little bit, and then God gives him very detailed instructions and says, hey, I want you to build this ark. And he doesn't just tell him, build an ark however you want it. God says, I want you to build this ark, and it needs to be this long, and it needs to have a roof over this amount, and it needs to be this wide, and it needs to be stored. I mean, it gives him tons of details. Why do we have those details? It's not really so that we can recreate it. We can, because we know, but the purpose of those details is to show us that God cares about the details of our life. When we're following God and being obedient to him like Noah was and like Noah said to be, then God cares about the details, and the details are important. They do matter. The people that you're standing in line with as you check out at the grocery store matter. The 5-second interaction that you have with somebody as you walk through a door, that matters. These details matter. And if we're going to be obedient and walking with God, then the details have to matter. They mattered in Noah's life. And again, Noah took on God's flavor wheel. The details mattered to him because he was obedient to God. He trusted that God knew what was going on. And this is a crazy thing I think about when you think about this ark. Like, I'm kind of a builder myself, and so I think about, man, if you tell me to build something that's going to house something, I want to know how big it is. Like, but Noah didn't run around the earth, like, measuring all the animals before it happened. He was like, oh, yeah, I think it'll be this good. Like, God gave him the plan and said, cut it this long and build it this tall. Why? Because God knew. And he didn't have to go measure it himself. He just trusted and did. And so we had this period of time where Noah begins to build this ark, and it was something that would have stood out. It was something that would have drawn scrutiny from other people around him. This is crazy. Why are you building an ark? Again, the flood concept was just non-existent in their minds. When I tell you about a flood, because you've lived in this area and because of what has been experienced in this area the last 5 years, you have a vivid imagery of flood. Like, I can tell you that, and I can just say the word flood, and, like, stuff starts coming to mind. I don't even have to describe anything else. You have this concept down. Noah and these people did not have this concept down, especially what was happening. Because what we see is that the flood actually covered the mountains. It flooded the entire earth. They had no concept of this. So this seemed completely crazy and completely off for them. There's probably a lot of uncertainty for Noah, but what we see about Noah's life is that he trusted in God's truth, and that determined his actions. And so for you and me, trust in God's truth and let that determine your actions. Focus on his flavor wheel. Focus on what he says is good. Trust in his truth and let that determine your actions. And God did everything as Noah did everything as God commanded him. Why? Because he trusted that what God said was true. That what God said was right. And so what happens is Noah builds this ark at when he's 600 years old. So 100 years have passed. We don't know. I don't know exactly how long he's building the ark, but for years and years and years, he's building this ark. And finally, we get to the point where God's ready for it to happen. He tells him to go into the ark. He's going to cause the rain to happen. The rain happens for 40 days and 40 nights, just as God had said. And then the flood, the mountains were covered. The earth was covered for 150 days. After 150 days, the waters begin to go down. But this just seems, again, like a movie script. And again, in the 150 days, I'm sure Noah found himself in the waiting again going, okay, God, what next? What's going on here? Like, we don't have any indication. God may have given him the knowledge of how long it was going to take, but I would guess that he didn't. We don't have any indication that God told Noah, here's how long you're going to be in the ark. That would have been a detail I would have liked to know, right? Because I can spend 5 hours in an airplane with my kids, and it's like, get me out of here. So if it's 150 days, I may be like, nah, I'm good. Which that may be what God knew. Like, if I tell you how long it's going to be, you're not going to do it. And so I'm just going to tell you what you need to know. And so Noah was in the ark for 150 days. And then I love this in Genesis 8, chapter 1. We're going to go fast forward there. It says this, but God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him in the ark, and he sent the wind over the earth, and the waters receded. Man, I love that line. But God remembered Noah. But God remembered. And so in the midst of all of these things, you see, like, the earth is gone down, but Noah was found faithful. And then you see this flood happen and cover the entire earth, but God still remembered Noah in the ark. What God said was true, and Noah continually shows faithfulness to God. Look at what happens when they come out of the ark in verses 8, or chapter 8, verse 20 through 22. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, taking some of all the clean animals and clean birds, and he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. It's just a way of showing trust to God, representing who he is. The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, never again will I curse the ground because of humans, even though every inclination the humans start is evil from childhood. So even though it's still evil, I'm never going to do this again. And never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. And in the midst of coming out of the ark, Noah stops again and recognizes who God is. In his life, he does this. He does this with his family and leaves this in them, recognizing, hey, God is good and God is here and what God says is true. And all the things that God told us were true. And so God, Noah is recognizing this. He's also trusting his life and showing continually, God, I'm still trusting you. I'm still following you. I'm still doing these things. And so then God reveals his covenant to Noah. Look at the end of their conversation in verses 9, or chapter 9, verses 11 through 17. Again, we're kind of fast forwarding through here. But God says to Noah, I will establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be destroyed by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is a sign of the covenant I'm making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I've set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign for the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all the living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God. And a covenant is just this agreement between God and all living creatures of every kind on earth. So God said to Noah, this is a sign of the covenant I have established between you, between me and all life on earth. So in the midst of all that happened, God then says, I will never do this again. And God points to this promise through a rainbow. And so he says, I'm going to put the rainbow in the sky, and that's what it's going to mean, that I'm never going to do this again, that you can trust me, that what I'm saying is true, that what I'm saying is good. But again, we as humans like to define our own flavor wheel. And we like to redefine things, and this is just one example of something we've redefined, because in our current culture, this is something that's been redefined, the example of the rainbow. And it shows us that we want to redefine things for our own version of good and truth that's inconsistent with what God says. And maybe you would say, well, I've not done that. But we as humans do this in a lot of areas. We as humans in a lot of areas will say, no, this is what I think is good. This is what I think is true. This is what's good for me right now. But when we do that, we're only operating off of something that causes disharmony between us and God. God said, this is the way it needs to be done. This is true, this is right, this is good. You can count on this, you can trust in this. And so like Noah, again, we're called to do that. And I think as we tell this whole story of Noah and what happens, it's like, man, that's a great story and that's an epic story and that's what we want to tell. But I feel myself before the end of what we see in Noah's story in the Bible is like, I don't know that I can really relate to him. He seemed like pretty good all the time. And like, I know he was a human, so I know he probably struggled, but it's not talked about. Like he seems pretty good, but even this was in Noah, and it's in all of us, this desire to want to recreate things and to believe lies as truth. What we see is Noah, after all this happened, builds a vineyard, gets drunk, and is laid out naked. Sounds like a good country song, doesn't it? But that's what happened. And so even in the midst of Noah's obedience and Noah's faithfulness, he still had this ability to fall. He still had this ability to believe a lie as truth and do that. And so friends, I think as we talk about this and we see Noah's story, what we see from Noah's story ultimately is Noah's obedience to God. And he was obedient to God. He was faithful. He was those things, but he still struggled. And if I'm being honest this morning, there's still times where I want to define my own thing. It's like, God, who are you to tell me what I'm supposed to be doing? Like if I want to smell, cheese, I can smell cheese. Right? Like I can smell whatever I want in my coffee, God, but no, God says, hey, this is where it needs to go. This is what's true. This is what's good. And that's a funny illustration, but I think it helped me click and realize like, man, this is where we're at because God has laid out something that's true. We have the choice to accept it or not. Same choice Adam and Eve had. Same choice Noah had. So what's going to be said of our lives? Are we going to be faithful to what God says is true? Are we going to be faithful to him? Are we going to blaze our own trail and pick our own path? And if that's you, like the bumper joked and like we've said, be warned, but also be encouraged. Like I don't want you to just leave this fearing God and doing this. Be encouraged. Why? Because everything God said to Noah was true. Everything God said is true. You can take it to the bank. You can put your life on it and trust it, and it's not going to change. And so we can have encouragement as Christ followers to not worry about things that are going to change or things that are going to happen. Like we know with certainty that if we trust in God's truth, that these things will happen. He tells us, he lays it out. It's just a matter of us getting to the point where we submit and humble ourselves and do that. So be faithful like Noah. Trust and obey God's truth. Let's pray. God, we come now, and Lord, we are grateful for you. And I'm grateful that you have given us this truth, that you didn't just leave it up to us to try to decide or figure out what was going on. At times we want that, but you've given us this truth. And God, in a world where we see a lot of things and a lot of truth being redefined as truth or as good, I just pray that we're able to see the result of that and where that's going to go. God, I pray that we're able to even though we may not recognize it or realize it, even though things may seem really crazy and scary and weird and odd, like why in the world would I be doing this? That we would trust you with our lives, that we would be obedient to you and faithful to you. And in everything that we do, in everything, that we'd be marked like Jonah or like Noah, And we would say, God, I'm going to believe what you say is true is my truth. I'm going to base my life on that. And that you would, like Noah, use our lives for something good. Even though there's failures and mess ups, just be with us and help us as we follow you. Help us be obedient to you and have faith in what you say. And when you say it, help us to believe it even to the point that we go and do. Because we believe what you say is true, it leads to action. That you are guiding our lives, not ourselves, not our own. Just help us give that up this week. Lord, we love you and we trust you. So we pray. Amen.